Pickaxe.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a festive Trifles podcast. That's what we're doing this morning. I forgot where I was for a moment.
Ho, 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 motherfuckers!
This is the sound of 10 in the morning for me. Ready? What do you suppose that is?
Is that it's a like piss? A, is that your piss jug from last night?
It's the last night's piss jug.
No, it's not.
Last night's piss jug. Yay!
Is it a hot water bottle?
No, it's not. Warm. This is my Huel.
Most streamers are G-fueled. Fucking Flax is G-fueled.
H-fueled.
Amazing. So as of when we're recording this, Jingle Jam, we're right in the middle of it. But by the time this podcast goes out, it'll be over. And the other thing that's happened this morning is Cyberpunk's come out.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
It's unprecedented. The biggest launch on Steam of a game.
Yeah.
Before this was Terraria with 486,000 concurrent players.
That's wild.
Cyberpunk last night was over a million.
Yeah.
A lot of people are playing on other platforms as well, because it's on GOG, which is sort of their own platform.
Yeah.
It's the biggest
big
game
boost
launch
for GOG, I guess, too.
Ever,
I mean, GOG
really
is actually pretty good, but
it's a great little platform. But I think that people are really attached to their Steam library, you know, and it's so convenient and because you've got everyone on there already and it's all in the same place, and I don't know, yeah, it tracks things as well, which is kind of like just nice to see. Oh, what have I done this month? Oh, I've played this much of this and this much of this. I don't know.
I wasn't interested in playing the game really at launch. Like I'm still not overly, like I bought it, but I noticed a lot of people got like early access to it, you know, like some people, like, you know, like the obvious ones you'd see, like, you know, big streamers or whatever getting early access and stuff. And then a lot of other people got early access to it as well. And I'm just left wondering, like, where's mine? Like, I never got any early access.
This is like the Twitch Rivals stuff all over again.
Like, I didn't hear one thing from one person. Like, nobody, not even a whisper, not even a hint. So I'm just thinking, maybe that's it. Maybe I'm done. You know, maybe 2020 is like been a good year for me, but like at the same time, maybe it's the last year for me.
Do you know what I think it is? Is that I think most of it is that they want it to go to YouTube. And if you're not like regularly uploading Let's Plays and playthroughs and previews and shit to YouTube, that they just kind of take you off the list.
Do you think that's it? No, I don't think that's it. I think it's just oversight. Also, there's so many content creators and streamers now. There's thousands and thousands, you know. They can't hit every single one up, or else they're not going to sell any copies.
True.
Do you know what I mean? Every chump in his basement is streaming now. So what, if you send it to Sips, you know, they got
what about
50 quid
chumps in their garage?
That's what they need to do.
What about chumps in their garages, though? Like, I feel like, yeah, okay, chumps in their basement's one thing, but I'm a chump in my garage.
Yeah, that's a step up.
That's better.
So I got it last night, and I played about an hour and a half of it, and I played it again this morning as soon as I woke up. And
we thought you weren't going to flipping turn up.
Yeah, I know.
We thought you were going to be a no-show today.
Luckily for you guys, I just glanced at the clock, and I was like, oh, it's 9:59, shit. And I ran downstairs and huled up.
Yeah.
Did the dishwasher and then came up here. I feel like God, I'm already a
cyberpunk like
guy.
You're like a teenage boy, aren't you? Just running downstairs. Oh, sorry, Mum. I'm going to play. I'll see you later. I've got friends. All right, bye. And then you're back upstairs.
Yeah.
I launched it. I bought it yesterday. I downloaded it and I launched it. I didn't even play 5 minutes. I didn't even get I didn't even check out the character creator. Like, I got into the character creator and I was just like, nah, maybe I'll play this like some other time. Or something.
I'm really enjoying it.
Well, it was like 1 a.m.
No, I get it. I just like, part of me is like a bit envious. I wish I had that, like, because this game is so hyped and everybody's been looking forward to it and stuff. I wish I had that like Christmas morning feeling about it, but I just don't.
I've been there with game launches before where everybody's hyped for a game and you're just not. And you kind of go along with the hype and get it and sort of try to get into it and it just never happens.
But you feel like, I don't know what the feeling is. It's not like jealousy or whatever, but I feel like I'm sneering at people that are like excited for it. You know what I mean?
No, yeah,
like
it's a weird feeling.
like fun sponge or like, a mood hoover or something.
You are really a not. Funge. It's you see overexcited, the hype.
Yeah.
The it almost looks childish.
Yeah.
That people are completely so excited about this and you don't want to be seen to be like that. And it's kind of off-putting seeing this kind of attitude towards it where everyone's into it. So you almost don't want to be because that's how we were.
I guess a lot of people felt the same way about me when I was waiting for Junkyard Simulator to release, which was my 2020 game, you know, like that. Right. That was my cyberpunk. I was looking so.
Did it
forward.
Come out?
Well, it came out like, you know, the usual, like the prologue, which is like the demo level, came out, and it was really bad.
Unbelievably
bad. And I'd hyped it up so much. I thought it was just going to be this really awesome game that I could just dad out hardcore and like crush some old cars and stuff like that. And it's just not like that. They crowbarred in this awful tutorial that you can get stuck in. You can't even get past it. Like at certain points, it bugs out.
I love how this is your cyberpunk.
It takes so long to get up to the point where it bugs out as well. And it's not enjoyable. Like you drive a car. Like you, okay, it's a game. It's meant to be a game about running a junkyard. And you have to drive a car down this really awful road that's bland as hell, like the scenery and stuff. It's just like I don't know what they were thinking. Anyway, I'm not like that bitter about it, but that was gonna be my Christmas morning feeling, right? I wanted to launch that game. I wanted to junk some cars. I wanted to like sift through some garbage and everything, and I couldn't even do it. And I was so disappointed. And now I'll never love again.
Is that what it is? You've just had your heart broken one too many times this year.
Not even just that one time, but that one time is devastating enough.
I do remember you talking about it, and I remember thinking, why is he so excited for Junkyard Simulator?
Well, I just thought
it is very much your type of game.
Yeah,
but I saw the trailer and everything. I was like, this doesn't seem worth getting that hyped about. I hope he's not disappointed. And sadly you were.
And sadly I was, yeah. Another one that I really liked, which wasn't disappointing, actually delivered, was that hardcock shitbreaker, Shipbreaker. You know that one?
Oh, yeah.
That was good. That just did what it said on the tin. Bust ships. You didn't have to drive down a road or anything. You didn't have to.
Did you play Tin Can yet?
I did. Yeah,
it's good, isn't it?
It's good. Yeah, I like the idea of it. I just didn't like the feeling of not really knowing like exactly what to do. I feel like because you have to junk old parts in that recycling machine. I found that whole system really clumsy and just
I didn't like that mechanic either.
Yeah,
because it kind of felt like. Like you said, but I mean, the reason it's there is because you have to decide what you can live without.
Sure.
So you're like, I don't really need the on-off switch for this set of lights. And
yeah,
I don't think that
at the start you should need to do that, though. I think there should be one spare battery, right? Like there would be in an escape pod. I'm assuming.
Right.
I mean.
Oh, so you're thinking it should start off a little slower.
Just have a spare
before you have
so
the
that,
junk stuff.
Yeah. And then you can just sort of like get your bearings rather than you hit an asteroid belt and all of a sudden it's like, okay, something's broken. What do I do? Like, I have to junk some old shit. I don't know if I'm going to need this or whatever. I just feel like ease you in a little bit and then ramp up the difficulty. You know what I mean?
I think it's kind of like a roguelike in that way.
Yeah.
Because you are inevitably going to fail. Like there's no end game. It's just that eventually enough stuff breaks that you perish, and it's like trying to get the longest score that you can.
Sure, but the thing is, like from a pacing point of view as well, getting up to the slogging through 25 minutes and getting to that one where the EMP thing goes off
and then just
melts everything. It happens, and you're like, okay, I think I know what to do next time, but. man, do I really want to spend 25 minutes getting to that point again? You know what I mean? Like, it's like, I like roguelikes and I like that sort of, but there needs to be more, right? There needs to be some, like, if it's going to be like that and it's the 25, you have to, there has to be some benefit for you learning that through a mistake or through dying and then restarting and going back through 25 minutes again to get to it, right? Like a real roguelike would, right?
Because you'd
have like some XP or some new experience or some new tool that maybe you could use or something. But this is just like, now you're fucking dead. You've got to slog through 25 minutes of garbage just to get back to the point to try it again, you know?
I think what makes it annoying in that regard is that it's kind of a time-based game, right? So it's like, it's not like you said, it's not like you figured out this first bit, like in Hades, say, where you go through and it's a lot of the same levels over and over again, but they're slightly different and you're improving as you go. And, you know, like you said, you're unlocking stuff. And I also feel like normally in a game, once you've cracked that first bit, you blitz through it. But instead, because of the design, you still have to wait for it. And you're just waiting there for 5 minutes or whatever. But I thought as a concept, I love the idea of
The concept is fantastic. Yeah. I think it could be really good. It's clearly early as well. Yeah. I'm not so sort of like narrow vision that I can't like see that it's going to be great later on. But with a lot of these games that are made by one or two developers or whatever, and like you get the earlier versions, it's kind of like hard to be excited about it because what you get is just so limited and you know that there's potential there, but then you just have to wait years for it to finally realize that potential sort of thing, right? Like I played some Don't Starve Together yesterday, which I've played a lot of Don't Starve and I really like Don't Starve. And I played some Don't Starve Together a while back. And at the time when I played it, it was kind of like that, right? Because Clay are a little bit like that. They're a great, great studio. But they release stuff really early and it's really bare bones for a long time until they just start getting into a groove of adding stuff. Like their content release schedule like ramps up a little bit. Oxygen Not Included was the same. Mm. And now Don't Starve Together after like a year there's so much shit. It's unbelievable, like mind blowing how much stuff is in it. But at the time I remember thinking like, this is really great. Like I love like everything that's in this, but there just needs to be more. And then you come back a year later and there is tons more. And that's, you know, that's always like a nice feeling or whatever. But I just think Clay are really good at sort of doing the early alpha, early beta access stuff. And
these three types of games are all so different, right? You talked about Tin Can, which is basically a kind of...
It's almost like a puzzly rogue thing.
It's like a puzzly short single player kind of bomb game where you have to quickly fix things. And you can't really add too much to that. It's kind of a one-off experience that's good, right? I love playing a game which throws you into a completely different experience. You're like, wow, I'm on a spaceship now.
Right.
I'm doing things. I'm trying to fix it. I'm trying to survive. And then like after 2 hours, you're like, that was a good experience, but I'm never going to play that again. You know. But whereas Don't Starve Together, Oxygen Not Included, these are kind of longer, like more sandbox type games where you can kind of take things at your own pace. There's different ways to progress. There's lots of things to unlock. It's a very slow, gradual effort thing. And then Cyberpunk, which is a multi-million dollar, the biggest game of the decade, drawing on every single genre of game that have been successful and popular. It's the king of the action RPG, if you like. You know, it's the pinnacle of what we've experienced over the last 10 years. And they can't really make it too different. They can't innovate. They can't like try weird things that haven't been done before because they can't risk it. You know, it has to be familiar to people. People have to know what they're going to get. It's like, it's very, very polished. It's got celebrity guests. It's a story-based game. Sure, it's got side quests like The Witcher 3, but once you're done as well. And it's got a, I don't know, however long our main campaign and however many side quests. And sure, they could do DLCs with another 10 or 12 hours of content. But again, it is that package of like, that's it. You know, how much time... You were playing Don't Starve Together with Glerms yesterday.
Yeah.
He that base that he built is like something crazy.
Thousands
it's like
of hours.
8,000 hours.
More hours than I've played any game on Steam in my whatever, however long I've had Steam for, however long I've been creating content for. Like I've played, say, a lot of Fallout 4, but it's only 400 hours compared to like the 3,000-4,000 hours he must have played Don't Starve Together for. Like, it's insane.
It's absolutely nuts. Yeah, like, it's the nuts. Amount of time and effort that's gone into creating what he's created in that game. And that's the difference, right? We have like these these completely different experiences in games.
Do you know some hype and sort of like collective hype thinking is such a weird thing, isn't it? Because like with Cyberpunk, I understand the hype. And I understand that Cyberpunk is a franchise that exists beyond this game as well, right? It's like there's like a board game or something. There's something
I don't think people know
about leading into this, right?
No, then again,
that
like
has
really
added
like
to their excitement
for
this.
People know of Cyberpunk genre, if
right?
You like.
Okay,
and people know of like the kind of
okay.
that you know that net hacker augmented kind of world. You know, it's certainly a popular fiction trope which I have enjoyed. You know, I'm sure Cyberpunk draws on some actual stories from somewhere like The Witcher
I don't think
it's like something which people are already invested in the same way. It's not a Marvel Avengers game or whatever.
Okay, but
you know
so some people are excited in that aspect. Some people are excited because they love RPG games. Some people are excited because they love story games and stuff. And it's a weird one because I feel like I should be like that, but if I look back realistically, if I look back to all the games I've ever played and the games that I've enjoyed and stuff, story-driven games I've played in my own time, very few. I've played most of the story-driven games that I've played have been on stream with like an audience that I can interact with, right? Like I played GTA 5. I would have never played through all of GTA 5 by myself, in isolation, in a room, without anybody to talk to, without an audience or whatever. I just wouldn't have enjoyed it. You know what I mean? I would have not paid attention to half the cutscenes or the story. I would have just become very task-driven in the end with the fetch quests and stuff.
90% of those games are just a bad long movie.
Some of them do feel like that. I mean, some of them really stand out, obviously. But through content creation, I'm more interested in playing story-driven games. But I'm pretty sure that I would never seek them out in isolation by myself.
But you love The Witcher.
Well,
right?
I like The Witcher, but I liked playing it with it, like knowing that somebody was watching me play it. Again, I don't know if I would have played that just by myself, not being a content creator.
For me, it's completely the opposite. I would much rather have the private experience of playing the story and goofing about and doing what I want to do and taking my time and you know, fucking up and reloading and not worrying about it. And for me, the idea of playing a multiplayer game or anything like that on my own is like weird. Like, that's mostly what I play, right, is multiplayer games.
Yeah.
That's, like, what I like playing. Whereas, like, the kind of games like Junkyard Simulator and stuff, I would only ever play on stream because I basically don't really enjoy them.
I'm the opposite. I would play those, like, alone or on. I love playing them on stream, too, but I would play them alone as well. Like, if I'm playing something alone, I'm playing something like Factorio or Satisfactory or something where I can just build stuff. You know what I mean? Just playing quietly with Lego, you know? Like I've always been like that. City builders, management games, whatever.
We're all quite different because I won't play the single player and I won't play the builder, but I'll play the kind of things that are in the middle, like something that holds my attention through being a game, but also has a decent story. So like, I mean, that's why my last two games of the year were The Outer Wilds,
right,
and Obra Dinn, you know, because they were such good.
Oh, Obra Dinn.
They had a little story that you had to uncover yourself.
Yeah,
it was quite mysterious, but also there was a game there.
I loved Obra Dinn, but I loved streaming Obra Dinn as well. I loved the interaction and stuff.
It was
like,
fun. And like, also,
but
I got stuck.
Also,
a lot,
Obra Dinn. If I played it by myself, I really would have really enjoyed it as well. Obra Dinn just for me stands out as probably one of the best games I've ever played.
It's amazing.
It was so good. And what was that space station game I played this year that's quite short? It was like 4 hours long. It's quite old now.
Is it the one where you are the robots and the, it's kind of like a System Shock kind of ripoff, that thing, or not?
No, but okay. I can't remember. God, I've got so many games in my Steam library though. Holy crap.
You know what's funny about Cyberpunk is obviously because the idea of Cyberpunk as a genre is so fixed in a way that I think if you describe, say, fantasy or sci-fi is not as fixed. Cyberpunk is very defined, and it was defined by just a few things early on in its sort of genesis, Blade Runner, Neuromancer.
Yeah.
Everything comes from that. So when I heard it was set in cyberpunk, I thought, okay, you know, that's cool. I find that I like the idea of the body modification and technology and like corporations and everything. But it's not like Cyberpunk 2077 has some brand new take on cyberpunk. It is literally exactly what it says on the tin. It is cyberpunk. So it is just exactly large corporations. If people are eating food on the street, it's going to be some kind of Japanese food or Chinese food.
Yeah, with neon signs everywhere.
Loads of neon signs, very Blade Runner-y.
Yeah.
Now, I quite like that because I really like the Blade Runner and Neuromancer. I read it when I was a very young man and had a major effect on me. Like, you know, as a sort of future shock book, I thought, wow, this is like amazing. I can't wait for this future. Where you can just plug into some kind of crazy network where you can talk to other people because this is pre-internet. And I remember thinking, wow, this is just like unbelievable. But it's weird because as a genre, it hasn't changed. It's basically remained this very similar thing.
I don't know how you push that genre, though. I don't know
exactly.
How you
That's
innovate
the thing.
On it.
It's a limited
you know,
genre.
It is really just sort of locked in, isn't it? It's kind of like medieval fantasy. Like there's a couple of different things that they've done with medieval fantasy. Like sometimes like the game might be more tilted towards like
it might be more
evil,
magical or
more
realistic,
magical or
yeah.
more like more satanic somehow, like Diablo or something
right.
like that. Like
but
Gothic.
Like think about the difference between The Witcher and Kingdom Come. Witcher was magic and you know, monsters and stuff. And Kingdom Come was literally a medieval
Garbage.
Story.
Oh, yeah. No, medieval.
You didn't like it?
Just joking.
Oh, dude,
it's,
it was
it's
so
a game
scuffed.
That I love to hate. I did
it was
really
so
enjoy
scuffed.
It.
I finished
I'm
it.
I'm the same, actually,
but it was
on
such
that,
a weird game, man. It was just... It was there were so many fucking infuriating aspects to that game.
Yeah.
And the combat has to be the worst designed combat. I've never played a game with worse combat.
Oh, just Flax, you got to cut that bit out. I mean, honestly, the squealing neck-bearded fedora-wearing nerds are going to all come out. This is the best combat
I
ever
I don't care. They're wrong. In terms of 1v1 combat, I thought it was quite fun doing the duels and stuff like that. But the moment you have to fight more than one person, it's fucking awful. I'm sorry, but it is fucking awful.
It took me a long time to be able to kill somebody in that game. and when I eventually did, it was just so unsatisfying. It was just the sort of reward for the amount of effort that you have to put in.
You get so much armor if you kill the right guys. You get loads of fucking armor.
Yeah, in the end, I had like a good system, but it was
But you,
just...
you've got to remember that your character starts off as just a peasant.
Yes.
So you literally cannot fight. Like even if you know the moves, you suck. Yeah. So it is satisfying to see your guy grow, and by the end of the game you are like kicking ass, which is quite satisfying.
That's
enjoyed
nice,
that.
Yeah. That's
but
nice.
Fighting against more than one opponent, you'd ended up just having to back up constantly. And all right, you know, maybe if I was fighting three people, I would just continually move backwards across a vast landscape. It just feels silly.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel cinematic, I think.
It kind of felt like in terms of like jankiness and bugs and stuff, it was like a Bethesda game on crank.
Oh, it was
right?
hilarious.
Like there was so many times where like I'd go and like interact with like the potion brewer and like fly up into the sky. I'd get off my horse and the horse would just like bug out or disappear
so
or whatever. Like I mean, and it was funny. It was good fun. Like, I think overall the game is pretty good, but there were really some
There's a lot of scuffed stuff. They're making a new one. Apparently, there is going to be a second one.
Really?
But I mean, I think they're a much smaller studio than some. But, I mean, when I think about Witcher 3, to me, that was like, there were bugs, but it was such a polished
game
absolutely. From the outset. And honestly, I know people are saying there's a lot of bugs in Cyberpunk. I haven't seen any yet. There are a couple of slightly odd design decisions.
There's a big big patch coming out for it apparently, like today or tomorrow, like a day one patch that's going to
Well, I mean, it
fix
went
a lot
gold about a month ago, so, you know, a month of work is probably going to have a lot of changes.
But I've enjoyed it. I've read some people saying that it's only so. I've enjoyed it because it's kind of like, it's got Deus Ex stuff in it where you can, I mean, I've gone for more of a hackery route. So my lad is like, a nerd, basically. And I thought, let's make him, you know, I can crack doors and I can hack this, that, and the other, because I love that. It's much more interesting to me to solve the puzzles and the fights that way. But yeah, it's good.
I'm like the WoW expansion. I'm personally not playing it, but I love seeing that people are happy with it and playing it. You know what I mean? It's a game that I've enjoyed in the past, and I would never begrudge somebody having fun playing something, obviously.
I think to me, like, the game isn't so much about the actual game. And I also don't expect things to last forever in the same way that, you know, I played the new WoW expansion and I'm kind of done with it now. And I feel like I'm happy with that. You know, I know that the game has got bits of it that are built to come back every day and come back every week. And every time I encounter one of those bits, I'm like, I die a little inside. Yeah. And I know that, do you know what I mean? Like every time I encounter something and it's like, you can't play again until next week, I'm like, well, that is something that like makes me sad.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I do like flitting between different worlds. And I think that's one of the joys that we have with gaming and with books and with other things that, you know, I'm constantly, one day I'll be, you know, in steampunk, kind of medieval steampunk, clockpunk, whatever it is, sure, clockwork stuff, you know, land. And then the next day I'll be in hard sci-fi space and everyone's frozen on a ship, yeah, flying to another planet. Mm-hmm. And then the next day where, you know, somewhere else, we're in Fallout, which is more like atomic punk, isn't it? You know, and so it's again a completely different.
Yeah, I much prefer that world, sort of setting. I feel like I enjoy any setting. I really like survival games. I like the sort of like you against everything, you know, aspect. You know, like I think I'd enjoy cyberpunk more if you weren't just like a citizen in some big Blade Runner city or whatever. And you could just sort of do your own thing a bit more, you know, like have like a little shack where you could like collect stuff or do stuff
you're
with that stuff.
With or shacks.
I know.
I
fucking
you
love it. I love it.
Like a
I love the sort of like starting from nothing stories, you know, like you're just like you live in a cardboard box and you have a couple of things that are yours and you just work your way
it
up
is
through
very
the
satisfying to buy a house in a town and put stuff in it.
Sure.
You know, yeah. I don't know, like there's some element of that which is very satisfying, and I mean that's the openness of the Bethesda games and versus kind of the more locked in story of things. Like I played a bit of Assassin's Creed Valhalla and that has a little bit of, you know, building and yeah, city sort of management and bringing back resources to sort of, you know, get your people out there. And I think these are great games and wonderful to like, it's nice to be suddenly a Viking, you know, and going around doing that sort of stuff. And
I'm not like overly like, again, I think I could play any game with any setting as long as like the mechanics sort
as
of
as long as it's set in a shack,
yeah,
or involves
it,
a shack
if you could
in
do some
way
sort of fishing or gathering or hunting or like you could have a trophy room or whatever, put me anywhere and I'm happy, you know, like I don't mind. Like if I can like customize something or, you know, make my car look different to anyone else's car or whatever, like those like little mechanics, I'm such a sucker
so,
for.
So
I love
here's
them.
One thing that I've been doing, which is a bit weird. I've got like a little cupboard next to my kitchen, which is supposed to be like a pantry.
Is
I
this
guess,
in real
right?
life?
Which, in real life, okay, which I've never really experienced right having before. And I've just really originally used it as just storage for like all the extra crap that I've brought along with me. Like, I don't know, old VR kits and old boxes. Right. And you know what I mean? Like you keep loads of boxes for stuff and you're like, oh, do I, because if this, what if the TV breaks? Am I going to have to send it back in the box? I've kept the, you know, you just keep this shit, don't you? And I put like suitcases in there and crap. Anyway, I remember one time we went to America. We went and visited, this was when we visited Maker. We visited this there was this PR lady who knew the Wu-Tang Clan and all this stuff.
Yeah,
it's
yeah
all these stories.
She was great.
Lovely.
Yeah, really nice.
And we went and visited her dad who lived in this sort of retirement town on the lake. It's where I fell into the lake and lost my glasses,
yeah, I
do you remember,
yeah,
on the video. Anyway, they lived in this house and in his garage, I'm sure I've talked about this before, he had like everything. He had a really organized setup of everything. He had glasses. Obviously, I'm thinking about my glasses. Didn't have a spare pair of glasses.
As far as the eye could see.
Literally didn't have the one thing I lost. No, but he did, you know what I mean? He had like tins of stuff. He had batteries. He had toothpaste. He had like everything.
Nice.
Okay. So, and sometimes.
Did he have a
when
box
I'm in
full
my,
of old doorknobs?
Honestly, he had everything. Nice. And sometimes when I'm, you know, in my flat, I'll run out of something. I'll run out of, I don't know, let's just say toothpaste. And I'll think back to that moment and I'll think, why am I running out of toothpaste? That guy, if he ran out of toothpaste, he could just pop into his garage and go to the shelf, which was labeled toothpaste.
Yeah,
there be
but you
a
live
rack
in
of
an
12
apartment,
toothpaste.
Though, Lewis. You don't
it looked
you
like
don't
a little
a
shop in his garage. And I always, but I've started to, I've got a little shelf now in my pantry.
With
and
all
it's
this
got
extra stuff
five toothpastes on there.
Well
and it's
done.
Got like extra, it's like organized.
You're almost ready to run a house and have children, Lewis. This is the first step, you know, buying more toothpaste than you need so that you have
backup.
But
I think it's
toothpaste
come from my developing way I've played games and become more organized in, I used to play games a little bit like I lived in a house where there was just shit everywhere. I didn't have any organizational structure. Like, you know, I've just had toilet rolls lying around in like the bottom of the shoe cupboard or whatever, you know, and any time I needed a toilet roll, maybe there'd be one in there, maybe there wouldn't.
Oh, okay. Isn't it the worst though when you use the last bit of toilet paper and you're in the middle of like a pretty messy one and you've run out of toilet paper and you have to get up with an ass full of shit and go and find another roll of toilet paper?
Yeah, you have to like gingerly put your pants back on. Yeah. And you're like, you're not sure whether you're gonna like,
yeah, but you pull them up but not all the way up because you don't want your underpants yeah. to ride up into that.
Everyone's done it.
Ass.
Everyone has experienced this at some point in their life.
So much.
Yeah. Mm. Sometimes at the office you'll do it and then you'll like stagger into the next store your trousers like half down.
Oh, you can't. What? Imagine you're in the middle of the stagger, you think the coast is clear and somebody comes in. Fuck me, that's gotta be awkward, right? Pants around your ankles, staggering.
That's like, the Larry David
shuffling from
moment.
One stall to the other to get the toilet paper. Oh my god.
These are just bad decisions.
Yeah, you
but
should never
no, I so I want to try and avoid situations like that from now on by being more organized. And I've started to take some steps. And I don't know, it was just nice. It just made me feel, I don't know, prepared, you know? I got some packs of rice and stuff. Like, I'm not doomsday prepping. I've only got a shelf.
Right.
But I feel like I've got like more supply. So
this is the equivalent in the drug world of like the first time you ever smoke weed, though. It's just a gateway to them becoming a prepper. You realize this, right?
But I think that
next thing you know,
cool.
You're going to have a full bunker with like 20 gallons of spare ketchup down there and stuff.
I want someone, if there's a zombie apocalypse, obviously I'm going to just die straight away, but I want someone to break into my flat and find a load of supplies and be like, wow
this guy had a lot of stuff. Yeah.
You're look at all this weird vegan cheese that he's got. Yeah, this is never going out of date because it's basically plastic.
Oh, I had a question for you lads. Something I read an article that they've finally made vat or lab grown chicken.
Yeah.
Like they cracked it. I think they're Japanese scientists did it.
Right.
And it's like they cracked it. And it's literally chicken that they've grown, not from another piece of chicken, but just like in a lab with the ingredients, they've like made chicken.
Yeah.
How many vegans would say, yep, yeah, that's fine, I'm switching back, or you know, I'm happy to eat vat chicken?
Yeah.
Is it because no animal has suffered? Nothing.
No, yeah.
Nothing has suffered. Would that be acceptable to you guys?
I personally don't see that as being any better than like micro protein based, you know, meat free products. I think I'd rather actually eat the micro protein based stuff because at least that just comes from
the mushroom-based one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Me too. I don't think I would eat lab chicken.
But the flavor would be the flavor would be chicken rather than mushroom.
No, but I mean like the flavorings they put on some of this stuff, I don't know if you'd really be able to fully tell the difference. Like I think where people would want to eat chicken is because like you can prepare meat differently, right? Like you couldn't buy fake meat and then prepare it to like a Michelin grade, you know, like a steak or something like that. You know what I mean? There's
right.
elements of a real steak that will always be juicier, taste better, flavor infused with
if
seasoning
you cook
them and
a
stuff.
Specific
I don't
way,
think you
right,
could ever
I see.
Get a meat free thing to that standard. So that's why I think people would still eat meat over not eating meat.
But how many people would say no? Even if it's grown in.
Yeah, I wouldn't. Personally, I wouldn't bother. The only time maybe I'd be tempted is that if they grew the chicken, it's like lab chicken, but it was like really plump and juicy and, you know.
Yeah, yeah, it's indecisive.
Whatever.
You could not.
I might
be swayed.
I mean, eventually
you will not be able to tell.
But the thing is, I'm so far down this road now. I've been a vegetarian for so long that, you know, I just wouldn't bother personally.
I guess for me, like, yeah, I don't need it.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like I've not eaten meat for so long that I'm not. If for example, I went to a restaurant and they didn't serve anything, but they did have some lab-grown chicken,
yeah.
I'd be like, fuck it, I'll try
yeah.
it. Do you know what I mean? I'm not gonna turn my nose up at it. But if there was a veggie or vegan alternative, I'd probably have that instead because I'm used to it. And also, I'm not – eating is a thing which, I don't know, maybe I'm not super in love with – food.
So I feel the same.
I feel the same.
I'm not attached to food, and in a lot of ways, I just find it gets in the way.
Necessary.
Yeah, I just feel like.
Interesting.
I would just. I've said this so many times before, but I'll say it again. If I could take a pill in the morning that would fill me up, and I wouldn't have to eat like for the rest of the day, I would be happy. Like I've
known this about you for a long time, Sips, and I'm not the
preparing
same.
Preparing food, but sitting down to eat food, like I can't be bothered.
I love food, and I love, you know, I love eating stuff. Don't get me wrong; it's one of the big joys of life. But at the same time, like, I decided to become a veggie because of health reasons. I just became to believe that eating animal products was not very good for you, and I didn't need that extra worry in my life, if you like. And I just didn't feel like it was necessary. So I stopped, and once I'd stopped, it was very hard to go back. Like, actually thinking about eating a raw piece of chicken kind of turns my stomach really a little bit now.
I
don't want to be feeling that way. If I'm, you know, if I'm presented with a piece of chicken, it will like make me go, ooh.
I mean, maybe the lab grown meat stuff feeds into other advancements that could maybe help medically or whatever at some point, but like, I just don't know what the point is when there's already alternatives that are fine. You know what I mean? Like, you can get like plant-based chicken products or whatever, and it's like, and they're fine. They taste pretty good. Like, you know what they are, you know what's in them for the most part. You know what I mean? Like, why have they bothered to try to make chicken in a lab? Is, I guess, what I'm asking. Yeah, what's the point?
It stops a lot of cruelty.
I know, I mean, but like, why not just try this plant-based stuff that exists already?
I don't think it's for us, though, is it?
I know it's not for us, but you know what I mean. Like, I don't know why people are so.
Well, it's obvious.
Hell bent on eating
cheaper.
No. Chicken. It's not just that. I mean, for one thing, it would solve a lot of the problems of things like the pollution caused by mass farming.
Sure,
it would be much easier and cheaper, as Lewis says, to just pour in a bunch of ingredients into one end of a thing, and it's your dream factory, Sips. You put things in one end, and something comes out the other. That's literally the whole point.
Just creates more problems, though. It sounds like a
biological nightmare. You know, like it's like a biopunk.
You know how all of this like
dystopian future.
You know all that, like the big, you know, like soy products. You know, like have become really popular, right? Soy milk, or like different alternatives and stuff like that. Anything that passes a certain threshold and becomes like mass produced, mass farmed and stuff just introduces new environmental damage, right? You know, like look at palm oil now. Like palm oil is cheap. It's in everything. It's like a disaster. It's just the new thing that is just going to screw us over somehow, right? Like they've moved past like old ways of polluting and have just found new ways to pollute through mass production. You know what I mean?
There's always going to be a cost, yes, I suppose, yes, environmentally.
But that's the thing. A lot of people are fixated on the cost. You know, like you just said, oh, it's going to reduce the waste of chicken. Yeah, no, it just creates new waste, like in other areas. So we move past like live chicken waste, and we move into like some weird new chemical waste.
Right,
instead.
But the whole argument of vegetarianism is that it's morally impossible to argue that killing an animal for food when alternatives exist is a moral position that you can take. You have to opt out and say, yes, I'm making an immoral choice, but it's my choice to make. That's the whole point. So there's no moral argument for raising an animal specifically to eat it when there are alternatives that don't require you to kill something. That's the argument, right? So if you don't have to kill anything, morally speaking, this has to be a better solution.
But you, in a roundabout way, do kill stuff, though. This is the argument I always make, like with vegans and stuff, too. You can't say that you're for animal rights and for pure veganism on one hand, and then on the other hand, support things that destroy the environment and the habitats of these animals that you care so much for in the first place. You know what I mean?
Well, like,
so anything that's produced on a mass scale will inevitably destroy environment and habitats. Which is completely countering your point in the first place.
Okay, but we do still need to eat.
Of course we do. I'm not saying that, but I'm just saying you got to think about this.
So the point
stuff.
Is we are going to have an impact. Can we lessen that? If this lessens the impact, that has to be a positive step. I mean, we can't just say, oh, it'll be another problem. I'm sure it will be. So, I mean, like,
it lessens
I know that,
it in the immediate, but then when it becomes mainstream, the impact it becomes either equal or maybe slightly more, or maybe just slightly less.
I don't know if that's provable. But
well, I don't think it needs to be provable. I think it's I feel like it's just common sense. Like
no, but you can't just say
that.
I mean,
8 billion people to feed on this
planet.
Right,
but if you look at cattle farming, for example, it's a big polluter, because not only do you have all this land dedicated to just cows and millions of cows killing those cows. Then you have the methane that the cows produce and all the rest of it. That's obviously a bad thing. Now, if you didn't have that side of beef production, whilst there might indeed be huge fields of whatever they make the beef out of, we would have cut out the methane pollution. Now, you're saying, well, there automatically has to be some other thing just as bad to replace that, because otherwise, how could you do it? I mean, I just think, well, then why try anything? Why try to improve anything? Because it'll just end up sucking.
Well, some crops are definitely better than others. Yeah. Like oats, you know, oats are obviously very low impact. They don't need much water. They're like pretty low impact, but they do need the land. Don't get me wrong. But for example, almonds, you know, require like 100 times as much water. And as a result, that's a big problem. You know, there are different crops, different levels of thing. But and if you can, you know, make a beef that is made out of oats instead of, you know, beef, then fucking that's obviously a positive, you know, influencer on the planet. But my question is, what happens if we just don't need to eat pea-flex? What happens if we just become like Tesla events, like
yeah,
a robot?
What if we're just brains in a jar and we don't have to?
Well, we
do
still
anything.
Need energy. Where's that going to come from?
Space,
electricity,
right? Wi-Fi. What's going to generate the electricity?
Thank you, emails.
Our own piss and poo. Emails. You have to send 1,000 emails.
Send
a thousand
useless thank you emails to power your jar brain.
It's like a dynamo. Yeah. You just have to constantly be productive.
Right, but...
Oh, my God. Could you imagine that would be it? That's some fucking cyberpunk shit, right?
Well, you got to keep moving to be fed, otherwise...
You've got to keep working or else you just drop dead.
But you'd have to put in more energy than you get out or you die.
Yeah.
So you're saying we... First, all right, step one, Elon. I hope you're listening. I know he does. Step one, you need to invent a perpetual motion machine, obviously.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, we're going to... If we have to run to generate the energy... Or send emails to generate the energy to feed ourselves now via our cyber stomachs. We're going to be losing energy the whole time.
Okay, now we don't need the perpetual motion machine. As long as you're creating something. So imagine you're working on making, I don't know, something which like that could be given credits, right?
Oh,
like
so you're saying it's more like a payment system.
Yeah.
Okay, so they're literally going to be monitoring you and saying,
so you're working
well
in
done,
the
you worked hard
box,
today.
The box factory.
And they press the nutrition button and you get some food.
Yeah, you're making the box. You're in the box factory. Every box you make... You know, you have to make like 100 boxes, but then after that, any boxes you make power you. Right.
I mean, that is essentially how society works anyway, because you have to pay for food. I'm just saying. We've just cut out the middleman. Now it's direct to your stomach.
Yeah. Oh my God.
I don't think it's something that gets solved in our lifetime. That's the thing. Like, there's always going to be little steps, like, throughout. I mean, there's been tons of steps, right? Since we were born up until now, there's been changes, and some of them have increased, and become, like, bigger changes or whatever. But, like, you know, lab-grown meat is always, like, going to be a little bit controversial. Equally, growing human organs in a lab is controversial. Like, there's a lot of, like, people pushing back on it. There's a lot of people who are for it because of the lack of
organs. I think those are minor roadblocks,
transplants
though.
And shit like that. Like,
I think those are just bumps in the road.
This stuff just takes forever to get through.
Oh, yeah. Forget about our lifetimes. Not much is going to change. No. But I think in future, we can see a general direction that things are going. Yeah, you're right. Like, look, there's 8 billion people on the planet, and the planet is only so big and can only support so many people. And, you know, but we also can predict that the population is probably going to level off at around 13 billion. And so we could do some calculations on the back of the napkin.
Yeah, just
if you
carry the four and you get one repeating, of course.
If you grow this many food and make this much water and, you know, use it this way, you know, you can sustain these systems for X amount of time, you know, and sure, like we are creating a lot of waste and we're using things up, if you like, and it can't carry on like that potentially forever. No. But, you know, that's something that we don't have to worry about immediately, because we currently still have millions of people who are dying.
There's so much stuff that people just don't really think about. You know what I mean? Like, okay, you order something from Amazon. Say you order like a whatever, a new pair of shoes or whatever. The components that go into that, into those shoes, the whole production line has involved probably killing some animals along the way, producing a lot of waste, producing a lot of pollution and stuff like that. The packaging that it comes in, not only will it come in its own packaging, but then it has to come in Amazon packaging for post as well, which is, you know what I mean? Like, how is any of this stuff sustainable? Amazon aren't growing their own forests and then cutting down trees and stuff. You know what I mean? Like, some people do that and it's good and it's a good step or whatever, but a lot of people don't do it because it's still... We're still in a society, we're still in an economy that is looking to make massive amounts of money by doing things as cheap as possible, right? And as long as that exists, it feels kind of hopeless, right? Like, it's never really going to get better until we can move past that.
I think it feels like humanity's running a deficit, you know, at the moment. The technology we have and the amount of hungry people we've got and the amount of education we've got, it feels like we're trying to just scrabble to feed and fix all the holes in the leaky bucket, you know. And I think that, you know, in the future, hopefully we will be able to make something. Maybe all it needs is for... the population of humanity to level off and start shrinking, you know, and people to be educated across the world and realize that, yeah, maybe we're not going to have so many kids, you know. I think that's the biggest thing. I think that the biggest thing you can do on your carbon footprint, you know, forget about all the Amazon packaging, forget about vegetarianism, forget about taking intercontinental flights. The biggest effect you can have is not to have
not to do the one thing that we were kind of kid. Naturally that's designed terrible. To do.
That's the worst thing you've ever said.
It's true.
The worst thing you've ever said.
It's true, though. It's weird, isn't it? Isn't it weird?
No, it's like, not weird. You know. You're weird.
That's fucking hilarious. Holy shit. Oh my god.
Listen up, fellas. 2020 sucked. It's a new year and we need new balls with our sponsor, Manscaped, which is the best in men's below the waist grooming, offering precision engineered tools for your family jewels and helping 2 million men around the world. If you want to keep your balls as sheer and attractive looking as a pair of well-trimmed kiwis, that's manscaped.com. You can get 20% off and free shipping if you use the code TRIFORCE at manscaped.com. Your balls will thank you, as will we, if you use the code TRIFORCE. 2020 was awful, so at the very least, make sure that your scrotum is well-groomed in 2021. That's manscaped.com. 20% off, free shipping, code TRIFORCE. Happy New Year to you and to your testicles. You're welcome. What else have you lads been up to this week?
Oh shit!
I've been playing a lot of Among Us, which
I know. Among Us.
The thing is, the nice thing about it is you can't binge on it. You know, like, I can't just fire up Among Us in my spare time and play it. Like, you have to have an organized group. So it's kind of like, a lot of the time you got like blue balls with it, right? So like, I'm always like scrounging around trying to find a group because I want to play the game. I like the flow. I like the game, but it's just so hard to get 10 people together to play it. So like,
the best thing I did in terms of streaming, and I think it, like, let's say I stopped streaming. Let's just imagine I stopped streaming. For some people, of course, that would be a great day. But for me,
I don't think anybody would think that's a great day. You're like a cornerstone of Dad Twitch, let's
call it a corner anyway of Dad Twitch. The best thing that I did was the sub Discord and creating a community there.
Yeah,
because like we do the in-houses on a Tuesday night, and there'll be like a ton of people waiting to play those games. Last night I fired up Hell Let Loose for the first time in like probably 4 or 5 months. I feel like, because there was a big new patch that came out, loaded that up, and straight away, there were 20 of us playing it. And if I want to play Among Us, and I'll just say something in the Discord, I feel like that, to me, like, I've created a community where we sort of moderate the kind of people that we allow in. If people are assholes, we boot them out. That is the most positive part for me of streaming. And off stream, I know that I can get a game of something going. That's my solution, is to
I haven't done that so much with my community, and in a lot of ways I think what you've done is better, because you have on tap a group for any game. You can have, right. You have 4 people if you need them. You have 10 people if you need them. You can have 30 people if you need them for like Hell Let Loose or something right. like that, right?
Or like when we did Rust and stuff, we got loads of people for that.
So what I've been doing with Among Us is I've been playing in a lot of streamer lobbies, which has been really good, but you know, content creators are so fucking flaky. It's impossible to organize. Like it's been, I've been organizing like my own lobbies. I've been partaking in other people's lobbies and stuff, and it's been really fun, but organizing my own lobbies has been really time consuming.
It's a hassle, right? Because everybody's but on really different satisfying schedules
as
well. Everything.
And then getting into other lobbies has been really fun too, because you just meet other people. You can make new friends that you might do stuff with or whatever. And overall, I think it's been really good. But I think what you have is a lot more realistically sustainable, right?
It's quite hard work at
you
times.
Can do, like when you want to play Rust, you can have a server full of people in Rust. But the thing is, because you hang out with these guys and play games with them so much, I could do that with my community. And I know like my mods, like, and I play games with my mods and stuff, but the wider community, I haven't really gamed much with, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, but you don't play the kind of games that, like we were saying, like you like people watch you for a very different reason.
Yeah.
They watch me because they want to see me fuck up in a multiplayer game so they can clip it.
Yeah. See, with me, I think it's because I'm handsome. I got my,
of course you are handsome.
My camera on and they can see my face and they can see all my, you know, when my brain is working and I'm solving like really intricate puzzles, they can see it. Like,
they can see it. And you just look even more handsome.
Yeah. With my big shitty beard. Fuck me. What a game, eh?
Yeah, I get where you're coming from, I think. But it's satisfying to find a group of people to play games with. But at the same time, like PFlex, you went through so much faff.
Yeah.
Like dealing with unpleasant people or people who don't quite fit.
No, I just
and
boot
the
them.
Drama and effort of trying to
you have to have a clean out. Like you've got to manage the community.
I think that's how like most people feel about me, like when they organize a lobby and then I turn up to it. They're having to deal with unpleasant people. They have to find somebody to get me out of there.
Just, you know, you've got to keep an eye on it. I think the main thing is that I've got really, really good mods. And I think, I mean, every streamer I speak to understands the value of good mods.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, they're just, these are guys that I've known for years now. And I trust them and they know what I'm going to like and what I'm not going to like. And what I'm going to say is like, that's unacceptable. But then also they'll come to me and say, you really need to do something about X. So, you know, we sort of moderate the community as a group. It is a little bit of extra work, but to me, it's very satisfying because it's just... It's so nice to have people that I can play games with and people that are funny and chill. And
yeah.
Like we were playing Code Names. Have you played that?
Oh, that's great. Code Names? Code Names is really fun.
It's a great game.
Yeah. Great game. So
play that with my mom
last night, or a couple of nights ago, we were playing it. And it's just great. I mean, it's just off stream, just hanging out. Because these guys are funny and they're fun to hang out with. And I play games with them every day.
Yeah.
And I love that. Because obviously none of my like old mates from school and like my real life old friends, none of them play games at all. Like to them, it's like a mystery. We had a WhatsApp chat last night where I introduced them to the concept of OnlyFans. They'd never heard of OnlyFans.
Nice.
no idea what it was.
Oh my God.
And I was like explaining, what? And they were like, had all these questions and I was telling them about all the various hot cosplayers I've met and shown them their Instagrams. They're like, my goodness, you know, it's like a whole new
that's
world.
Hilarious.
Because it's just not something you'd ever read about or notice. It's like not a dark corner of the internet, but the internet is so vast and there's so many different avenues you could go down that if you don't, there's no crossover between reading about the news or football and suddenly finding yourself on a smut-filled OnlyFans. It's like, I just thought it was funny that it's not a cultural sort of thing that everybody knows about yet. Whereas to me, everybody knows about it. Like, you know, people joke about this kind of stuff. But yeah, my mates have no idea about it. Mrs. F had never heard of it. I had to explain to her what it was when I was relaying this story to her this morning. But yeah, it's just kind of funny how different my view of what the internet is and everything like that and the people that I think of as being on the internet are and the average persons of my age. It's just completely different. Completely different.
It's a completely different world. They know nothing about, and it's really interesting to them as well. They're like so interested in.
I think they're horrified and interested. Yeah, it's like what is that? It's like sort of morbid curiosity about this.
But it's like the same as us. It's like it's like nice to go into a medieval.
This is their cyberpunk. Is me telling them about OnlyFans and then discovering the cam girls.
Feels like. Yeah, I wonder how people feel. Like, I wonder how people feel like ordinary folks who play Cyberpunk feel like Cyberpunk is the future. Do you know what I mean? I wonder how many people, because a lot of people watch like sci-fi stuff or superhero stuff, and they're like, oh, it'll be really cool when we have superpowers, won't it? And I'm like, what are you talking about? We are never going to have super strength. That's not going to happen. You know, like, we're not suddenly going to be able to just have laser eyes.
Who has ever said to you, it's going to be really cool when we all have super strength?
I don't know. Like, certain people I've met, though, PFAX. I really do know people like this.
We're going to have super strength one day.
Well,
I can't wait till we can jump over buildings in a single bound.
They sort of feel like, oh, science is really cool, isn't it? I wonder, almost like kids, you know, like, oh, look, could I get bit by a radioactive spider? And no.
These are children.
That's not how
you're
it
talking
works.
To children. I'm
you're
pretty
just
sure.
going to go to hospital. I don't know. Like, but a lot of adults just are just big children, PFLAX. They don't really, in the back of their minds, I think they do believe that, you know, especially when you see stuff like in the Jingle Jam this year, we've got these open bionics arms, which are being supported. Have you seen that? They have these really cool bionic arms that they've got, and they look pretty cool, and they seem to work pretty well. Very impressed. Anyway, I think we should probably put a pin in this podcast, because Sips has just dropped out of the channel. I think he got disconnected.
Oh, yeah, I think his internet's gone down again.
And I've also got to do some stuff.
We got some JJ back, into
Sips.
JJ.
Thank you, Sips. Sips just said Sips is back, but he says his audacity stopped. All right, thanks, everybody.
Bye.
Sips is saying goodbye as well. All right, bye.